But it's about uncovering what the problem is and figuring out what that is. And that's why humans are so important in the sales process. Because it's like, again, cross-examination in a courtroom. Like, would you want an AI bot to be your lawyer? Probably not.
Plug into the minds of the world's cutting-edge innovators, visionaries, and thought leaders who are rewriting the rules of sales and success. It's your time to make an impact. I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast. Welcome back, everybody, to the Selling with Love podcast, and I'm very excited about today's episode because I'm bringing a man who is in the trenches, in the hardcore sales world, the corporate sales world, and he's training thousands of salespeople across different industries, and he has personally managed and hired over 1,500 sales development representatives. And he's going to be talking about what are some of the biggest things that are happening in the industry of sales, talking about the key skills that really make somebody successful at sales, and perhaps the things we should look out if we're having any kind of blocks or struggles with sales, and why in today's world, we might think that sales is going away with all innovations in technology and AI, but you're probably going to see that there's going to be an influx of people going back into doing ethical sales because it's important to connect with humans more than ever. Gabe Lulo is joining me. He's the CEO of AliOop, a sales development organization which has been working with companies such as ZoomInfo, SalesLoft, and Adobe. And he's going to be here teaching us a little more about sales. I'm excited to have him on the show. Welcome, Gabe. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much, Jason. I'm a huge fan of yours. I appreciate the invite, and it's going to be fun. We're going to have a good time.
I mean, I always like bringing a fellow salesperson on the show. I mean, for one, if you want to have interesting conversation, bring a great salesperson. And like, we're here to ask questions, answer objections, like the skills of interviewing and sales.
And tell stories, right? Selling is all about storytelling. So yeah, I'm with you on that.
And so one of the stories that's maybe prevalent in people's mind is that it's the end of sales and that AI is replacing most of these types of functions in sales. So I'd love to get your lay of the land. What's going on in sales? What are some of the biggest myths and maybe some of the truths that come with a statement like that?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, 2-3 years ago when AI started really coming on the market, everyone was saying, you know, robots, AI, everything is going to be replacing sales. And it's really not the case. I mean, 2025, we're actually seeing a rebirth of sales development reps, a rebirth of people and humans involved in selling. You know, people want to buy from people. And now I'm not saying AI is absolutely not a part of that. It is a significant part of it, but it's really about enabling the sales rep and creating tools and technologies to support the rep. And really, you know, the reps that were just sending emails all day long and, you know, doing sequences and, you know, really just doing really essentially the bare minimums. Yeah, you are absolutely going to be replaced by AI. But an SDR or even an account executive that enables and adapts AI into their ecosystem and into their ability and skill set, those individuals are going to replace the salespeople we know of today. And so that's how we approach it.
Yeah, it's definitely an enablement tool. And this story has been repeated so many times. Like when the internet came out, people were like, it's the end of salespeople. And then social media came out, it's the end of salespeople. And like, this seems to be repeated, but it's with reason. Like there's always, you know, let's be clear, there's a lot of bad sales that happens and everybody usually has a resistance towards sales. And so when you see all the ones doing the bare minimum, maybe being replaced by AI, what room exists still for a lot of bad sales practices? Are you seeing more of it come out? Are you seeing that being like flushed out because of AI?
What's interesting, the first thing that AI is really doing right now and shaking things up is email automation. And to your point, right, when the internet came out and social media, there was a point about 10 years ago when Marketo and Pardot and all these big email automation platforms came out. And again, everyone's like, fire all the salespeople, go in on all, you know, everyone just email everybody and everyone's just going to buy everything just off of an email. And then they quickly realized that that's not going to happen. And they rehired all the salespeople back. And now every salesperson uses marketing automation in their day-to-day, you know, job. So it's just another piece or another tool to go ahead and help, again, augment that rep. But at the end of the day, you're right. You know, a lot of things are happening right now in AI emails. And I don't know about you, but my inbox is cluttered with stuff that, you know, is really, really bad. Now, I'm sure it's going to get better. But at this point, you know, I don't really care if the email says they know what college I went to and then they try to sell me something. Like that's essentially what personalization in AI emails are really doing these days. We make 11 million cold calls a year. You know, we have over 100 sellers on our sales floor making 11 million cold calls a year. And that's still the number one way people say yes to an appointment is off an old traditional phone call. And I know that sounds weird and archaic, but that's literally what's happening. You know, companies like ZoomInfo, they have 350 SDRs. Oracle has close to 1,000 SDRs on their sales floor booking appointments. These are really big brands, hugely tech savvy companies relying on humans to do the work.
You said the word SDR a few times. I'd love you for elaborating that for maybe some people who aren't familiar with some of the lingo.
Yeah, I always forget it's in our space, so it's like my lingo. But yes, an SDR is a sales development rep. And just think prospecting, think cold calling, think emailing, think reaching out to people on LinkedIn. The appointment setting function of the sales cycle is what SDRs do exclusively. So about 10, 12 years ago, when we partnered up with ZoomInfo, we were actually just a sales training firm. We were a bespoke sales training company. And ZoomInfo came to us when they just had sellers. They just had account executives. And they said, you know what? We really need more appointments. We need more at-bats. We have a great sales team, but we just need more people in front of it. And that's what we did. We started building out SDR teams. And then, of course, you know, the industry itself has completely exploded. And it just made sense, right? Why would we want a seller to spend 80% of their time prospecting and 20% of their time presenting and closing? So we took that off the account executive's desk. And now those SDRs are focusing on appointment setting and passing the baton to the seller who does the, you know, the demo and runs it across the finish line.
You know, it's very interesting because I come more from like the online marketing background. Like I was in publishing, I worked for companies like Mindvalley. And even before that, like I was very much doing like direct response marketing. And they're often the ones that are like really doing some of the tactics and testing a lot of the stuff that then you see it actually escalates and then in corporate goes out and it's like, holy crap, that works really, really well. And there was a big shift that happened. I think it would have been like 5 years ago where 10 years ago, everybody was like funnels, funnels, funnels. You need automated funnels, automated webinar, automated this, automated that. And then people weren't buying. Their conversion rate was super low. And then they started using different terms, which mean the same thing, which was setters and closers. And then they basically started saying, in our process, we just need the people DMing. We just need people setting appointments. And these are the SDRs. And then you had the closers. Now, what would we call the closers in proper B2B technical terms?
They're called account executives or AEs. So that's the acronym there.
There you go. And so I've seen that shift happen on the digital marketing space or the online direct response space. In corporate, I'm seeing the same thing. So again, it's like a rebirth of the human to human touch. I personally feel like it's a positive trend. Like we're having people connect with people again, even as we thought that the whole process was becoming dehumanized. So I have a very positive outlook on where sales is going. I'd assume you'd be the same.
I am the same, absolutely. And it's interesting because there's another layer to this that's absolutely blowing up. And it's the reason why I'm on this podcast with you right now, and that's content. So what we're seeing is sellers, even appointment setters, right, being influencers on LinkedIn. You know, there's SDRs right now that have 40, 50, 100,000 followers on LinkedIn, and they're getting a ton of response from that. And they're really just micro influencers and subject matter experts, and their entire intention is to grab the attention of a buyer and then pass that baton to a closer. And so content is significant, right? It's blending now into the B2B space. Of course, you know, Instagram, TikTok, it's huge in B2C. It's of course huge in personal life, but it's now blending big time into B2B. And LinkedIn is becoming the new place where everyone goes to for information in regards to business, marketing, sales, thought leadership in business. So it's been significant in addition to the cold calling piece as well.
You know, even if I speak to people who are building their personal brands, the content has always been the forefront of something that needs to be done. But there was maybe a hiccup moment where people were like, wait, is content still relevant? Because SEO is not as relevant. People are now using AI tool to get their answers. How do you see the evolution of content in that age?
I think it's really capturing the attention, standing out between the noise, right? And it's not about white papers and case studies, which is what everyone looked for when it comes to a sales decision. Hey, can you send me your white paper? Can you send me a case study? Can you send me your deck? I mean, that's not important anymore. People now, they want to go to your content and they want to trust you and they want to know what you're about. You know, I post every single day on LinkedIn. I have probably 800 short videos about just this industry of sales. And we have 60% of our new business is still coming from our appointment setters. We do our own, by the way, outbound. So we drink our own Kool-Aid. But it used to be 100%, and now 40% of our new business is coming from content creation. So it's definitely significant, even though, of course, you know, SEO, as you mentioned, very similar to how email is today, it's not as effective at all. And so we're doubling down on calls, physical people talking to people, and of course, that content piece to create third-party credibility.
I had my most interesting thing happen when I got in a conversation with someone. I'd won a competition, did a sales consultation, and I always like getting curious about, how the hell did you find out that I exist? And they were like, oh, I bought your book. I'm like, how'd you end up buying my book? And they're like, I made a search on ChatGPT. And because the book exists, because content keeps pumping out from being on a podcast, ChatGPT has some sort of, like, there's going to be AI SEO, like, it's not going to be searching AIO, yeah, I guess AIO, AI optimization, like,
yeah,
AI,
yeah.
But it's still the same thing. It's just, if you're actually producing valuable content, it's naturally going to be something that's always a habit to keep doing. And I've had a few conversations with guests about this, but it's like, still true, still relevant, more relevant than ever. Keep doing the good stuff. It sounds like you guys are crushing it doing it. So that kind of brings me to a point where I'm like, okay, let's acknowledge sales is here to stay. We're doing it more sophisticated than ever. We got the better tools to help us do it better. So I'd be curious to know, what are some of the pitfalls or still resistances that you see when people are getting into the field of sales that we should be paying attention to?
Yeah, I think it's really just leveling up, like more of the same, becoming more sophisticated, becoming highly equipped. You know, a lot of people get into sales with zero to little experience at all in business. You can't go to, you know, college to get a sales degree. Most people who get into sales usually fall into sales for some sort of reason that they didn't plan on. And so because of that, there's a lot of newness there. And I really would tell you, I don't know of another industry though that has enough or more content about how to get better at it than sales, right? There's so many books, so many shows, so much content out there you can easily get your hands on. And so my biggest thing when it comes to sellers, especially when we work with a company, because if we handle the appointments, then to your point, they need to close. So we don't do the closing. So we can pass as many leads as we possibly can over to companies. But if they're not capable of actually running across the finish line, we have a problem. And what we're seeing more than ever before, especially with the displacement and the, you know, kind of like the shakeup of the SaaS and tech business, is there are a lot of people right now who are still very, very junior in the industry. And I think training is so important more than ever before to level up your game.
Do you naturally look like when somebody has, let's say, a leniency towards being hungry to learn? I would say that's probably one of the better qualities to look for in a salesperson. Are there other key qualities you look for in somebody to make sure that maybe this is a great way for them to specialize?
Yeah, it's interesting. The number one thing we look for in our interview process is grit and just that resiliency and that tenacity and the hunger and the desire and drive to run through walls. Because again, it's a performance sport, right? It's a contact sport. And more people you contact, more money you make. Commission is there. And you could do very well financially, but you have to get good. And the reality is, it's very hard to find that because you don't see it on a resume. You can't find, hey, I am really, you know, motivated on a resume. So you have to find that. And you have to, you know, interview people correctly to see if that's even there. And then you have to test for it as well and monitor and manage it when you first get them started. So grit and desire, like you said, is by far paramount. But then I call it the three C's. You got to be consistent. You got to show up every day. You know, you can't do this ebbs and flows in sales. You need to stay even keel when it comes to your emotions as well. Secondly, you have to be confident to the point where it's almost unruly. But because you're calling executives in my space, and you're calling VPs, directors, CEOs, and these individuals, they have a healthy confidence themselves, right? You have to talk to them and get them to say yes. So you have to be confident. And then thirdly, you obviously have to be coachable, right? To the training piece. There's ways to do this that are effective and people have figured this stuff out. So if you come to the table with a chip on your shoulder, there's a difference between, you know, cockiness and confidence. You got to be confident, but you can't be arrogant. And so that's what we look for.
You know, one thing that might be more particular to the audience profile that usually listens to this podcast is they're often selling their own product and services, and sales is an activity that is necessary for them to be able to get off the ground, get the startup going, be able to talk to these people. And that confidence piece, often is a big roadblock, especially if they're new to the industry. They don't have the case studies yet. It's not even like a lack of confidence in the sales process, but it's even a lack of confidence in the entrepreneurship experience in general. They're green. And so I'd be curious to hear from you. Like, do you see confidence as something that's trainable? Do you see something that's inept into people? And like, what are some of the ways you've seen people really rise up to their level of confidence?
Yeah. So what founders and owners of new companies have that sounds like confidence, but it's different, is passion, right? They have a conviction and a passion about whatever it is they're bringing to market. They truly believe in the offering, the service, the technology that they've either built or thought of or invented, and they're excited about that. So that is definitely a level of confidence. Now, when I say confidence in sales, is knowing what to say back to someone who says something to you. You know, my grandfather taught me a long time ago, he was like, hey, Gabe, you got to know all the exits when you go into a room. And the reality is, like, the reason why that's confident is because you know what to do if something happens. And so when I say confidence is, listen, there's a handful of things people will ever say to you. You know, this costs too much. I have something in place. I'm not that interested. Send me an email, right? I'm all good. Like, there's like 7 to 10 things that people will say to you, no matter what you're selling. So if you can get good at knowing what they're going to say, and most importantly, knowing what to say back, which is 100% trainable, right? That's where that confidence comes in when it comes to building business, acquiring revenue. But if you're a founder, if you're a CEO, and if you're starting a business, it's your business, you already have half the battle, which is the passion of what the product is.
How much do you encourage the founders and, you know, even the people that may be more technically inclined, more passionate about the product than the sale of the product, how much do you encourage them to develop skills in sales?
Yeah, it's interesting. We hear that all the time. You know, a huge portion of our business are founder-led sales companies. And they come to us and they said, listen, I tried to do this by hiring a VP of sales and it didn't work out. I said, well, the problem is you hired a VP of sales. See, that's not day one. You don't do that when you're brand new. And here's why. VPs of sales, here's what they want to do as soon as you hire them, is they want to then go build a team, right? They don't want to go sell. They're a VP of sales. They're not an individual contributor. They want to go build a team and spend more of your money, Mr. Founder. So what you want to do is you want to, you know, get setters. You want to get people who are more on the junior of the pay scale and get people in front of you. And yes, I know you're not a salesperson. You're a developer and you created the software. And the last thing you want to do is talk to people. But you have that passion, you have that excitement, you have that understanding of the product, and you want to go ahead and then have that story. And again, see the people tell the story. You want to get in front of those people, and we can go ahead and do that. And then once you have revenue, then once you have product market fit, which is most important, and then once you know what your ideal client profile is, which is companies that you really can solve their problem, then you can start building systems in place that VPs of sales can come in and take over. So that's why we encourage them, again, this is not a plug, but encourage them to start with an outsourced team, no different than you would start with an outsourced accounting team to do your books or an outsourced HR team to do your hiring or an outsourced marketing team to build your website. It's okay to bring an outside help to build your sales engine, and then you can take it over and build it in-house and internally from there.
Every business today is an online business, and you're going to need a website. If you're using WordPress, you're going to need to host it on a powerful website host that is lightning fast, works all the time, and can give you human-to-human support in the process. That's why today's sponsor is Kinsta, and we're going to encourage you to check out their incredible offer for those of you who need a reliable host for your website. Ready to experience Kinsta's hosting for yourself? Get your first month free when you sign up at Kinsta.com today, and it's the perfect opportunity to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses worldwide to power their websites. Visit KINSTA.com to get this limited time offer for new customers on select plans. Don't miss out and get started free today. I love that recommendation because it forces people to think what would need to be in place to be ready to outsource something and to afford a larger commitment that could be a fractional commitment at the same time. But you, it's like, what eggs need to be in order before I can go start making that omelet? And one of the things I might be curious to know, because there's obviously some people that might reach out to you and often they're not ready. And so I'd be curious to know, what are those typical ways that somebody would not be ready to hire an outsourced sales team, booking their appointment, filled in calendar, so that it gives us clues on what are the things we should focus on to get ourselves ready?
Yeah, it's interesting. We like to say yes to everybody, and we've come up with programs that really allow people who may think they're not ready even to work with us. And I'll give you one example, and then I'll answer your question. Is, you know, a lot of founders come to us and say, we need funding, but I need to understand what the market fit looks like. I need to understand what my competitors look like. I need to understand what the best features are right now. And what more of a better way to do that than go out and have conversations? So if we're going out in front of the lines and having conversations, we can actually start to learn on what that product actually needs to then bring it to market. There is definitely room there for us to help, as long as we manage expectations that we're not here to close business and triple your revenues. We're here to find out what to do to build your product effectively so you can deliver it. And to your point, you know, the big thing is, if you do want to generate revenue, do you want to go to market in a big way, you need to deliver on the offering. Right? Because if we put people in front of you and they're excited and interested, and then you go ahead and get them to say yes to a DocuSign and you can't deliver, then everything falls apart from that point forward. So it can't be too junior where, you know, you're really free everything, not pre-revenue, and then we can help you out.
Nice. You work mostly in the tech field, or do you often work with people that are not in a technology space? Does that have a significant difference?
Yeah, it's all business to business. It's not tech. We started in tech for sure. Data companies, Outreach.io, Salesloft, Aurum, Adobe, ZoomInfo, as I mentioned. But then we've migrated into pretty much everything that's B2B. And the reason why is we're not calling homes or individuals. You know, we're not selling, you know, TV services, or we're not selling, you know, more consumer-based products. We don't do, you know, product-led growth or trials or anything like that. We're working in B2B, but that can mean professional services. That could be sales training. That could be staffing companies. That could become franchise opportunities. You know, so we definitely work, you know, we have a commercial cleaning company, huge commercial cleaning company, and we're calling, you know, businesses to get their proposals and quotes and RFPs set up. And on the other side, we have Ingram Micro, and we have 8x8, and we have Peloton. Literally, we're calling hotels to get Peloton into hotels. So as long as there is a business-to-business approach and there's an appointment that leads to a demo, then an SDR can absolutely find its way in that sales journey. We can support it.
Would you have something that would be maybe a caveat to take into consideration if someone is doing B2C sales? Because a lot of my audience might be selling things that would be around personal life. Maybe it's coaching services, mentoring, and personal support, fitness instructors, etc. Do you find that there's maybe some of the things we've talked about that we should be like, oh, actually, if you're in the B2C space, maybe some of these don't apply?
Yeah, you really want to look at full cycle sales. And what I mean by that is, when you're in a professional services that's very, very niche, and you're doing like a professional development or personal training or what have you, the sellers should also be able to deliver on the product, right? So we had a business that we just really didn't see a fit for us. And they had 22, you know, professional personal coaches and mentors in health and wellness and fitness. And they want to hear from the expert right away. It didn't really make much sense to, you know, get an appointment and then go ahead and do a consultation and then go ahead and talk about a business plan. It was more like, hey, I'm the actual product, right? And if you're the actual product, then it makes more sense to take it through the entire sales cycle. And that's where I think content really, really resonates, especially in those types of industries where it's more of a marketing play and then you're approaching it with an inbound play for sure.
One of the things I've noticed, especially in an economy that's shifting right now, people are maybe holding on to their wallets a little tighter, is if you are in the B2C space and what you're positioning your product to be is kind of a nice to have, a convenient thing, it's not having as much success. And there's a lot of times that you want to kind of take a B2B approach and think about like, okay, what's the ROI? How do you make a business case out of selling this service? And so maybe if people are trying to transition out of that, have you seen some examples of how to bring your product to be something that's considered more of a B2B approach, and if that's more effective?
Well, I think it's using B2B tools and B2B methods in a B2C world, right? And so we were talking about AI, like we can use AI technology for great messaging and copywriting. We can use it for videography and cutting for content creation. We can also use it for email, like we talked about before. You know, there's a lot of email opportunities there. And so for instance, you know, we can also do cold calling, but at the end of the day, that's a really big expense and the ROI may not make sense. When you're talking about physical humans, I mean, think about that's payroll, which is the biggest expense in most cases. And that's where it starts to get costly. So the ROI really needs to be there. or it is a very high demand product and you're getting inbound and it does make sense to have a team qualifying those leads before it gets to the right person's desk. So yeah, that's how I would approach it from a B2C world.
Then would there be some level of truth to the fact that in the age of AI, we're seeing a lot less needs of salespeople in the B2C space, and it's just you have to be a high performance B2B seller so that it still makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Like in smaller transactional, low ticket item, low annual contract values, transactional sales, you know, for sure, that's where AI is going to live. I need 3 or 4 questions answered. An AI agent can answer those questions. Then you go right into a self-serve opportunity to sign up or to buy. Yeah, that's where AI is really making a lot of impact right now. But if you're going to buy a $200,000 ERP system to run 16 factories or something like that, then yeah, it's going to be people involved.
Yeah, you know, this is so in line with what I've seen in the industry for like people selling educational products that are more for the personal side, that there's a big movement away from selling low ticket. Everybody's talking about how to sell high ticket because the math doesn't work anymore. And I do see how it's so much more interesting to look at these B2B opportunities where the numbers, it's like high ticket, oh, 5,000. That's a cute way of looking at high ticket. Let's put a couple zeros on there to see what this real high ticket stuff looks like. And that's where the B2B world is. I feel like most individuals are not exposed to high quality sales that happens in B2B because it's not something like you'll encounter. Like most of our experience of what sales is walking through a mall and somebody trying to sell you a cell phone plan, you know? And I find that's very unfortunate. And I'd love to extract from you a sales story, like a beautiful sales story that can really help people understand that, hey, when you actually get into these more sophisticated sales cycles, you start having all the right qualities be in place of somebody that's transacting human to human.
Yeah. It's as simple as this. You have to solve a problem. And then you have to understand what the problem is by asking very poignant questions to determine what that problem is to then hopefully solve it. And I'll give you the example. There's a gentleman who's a good friend of ours. He's also a client. And he wrote a book also. It's called Gap Selling. His name is Keenan. It's a very famous book. And he was a sales guy. And he realized, you know, there's a gap. And the gap is I have to go from here to here. And in that gap, there's a problem. And whatever that problem is, that's how we have to cross that bridge to get to a solution, to get to a deal, right? And so he figured that out and wrote a great book about it. But he's also a client of ours. So to your point about professional services, you know, we book appointments for him to go in and train huge sales teams. His annual ticket item is you know, in, like I said, many zeros on that for him to even think about going to it. But it's about uncovering what the problem is and figuring out what that is. And that's why humans are so important in the sales process. It's like, again, cross-examination in a courtroom. Like, it's about a lawyer. Would you want an AI bot to be your lawyer? Probably not, right? So, you know what I mean? So when that is stuff is on the line, though, like, that's what this is all about. These are huge dollar figures that are on the line. So I would say that's a great example of what to do and why sales is so important and a good story about him and what he's been able to accomplish with that exact problem-solving method of sales.
This is the thing I love the most about having conversations with great salespeople is, you know, I get reminded and given examples of how great sales looks like, how it's done, because it's fun to laugh at sales culture too. I mean, let's say that we all have our little shadows as well. But at the same time, you know, when I look at the fundamentals, when I hear about the success stories and I hear the advice that's coming from everyone across the board, which usually comes from people with a lot of experience in the B2B world, it's like we have 2 ears, 1 mouth. We have to listen more. Then we speak, where it's about, you know, solving problems, caring for people. And this is what I'm trying to bring to the masses so that we don't have this like sleazy used car salesman mentality of what sales is all about. And, you know, these are some of the key ideas that I know you do in your training and you work with your SDR. So going into that, I'd love to see if you have some great takeaways for people that are out there and they're doing their own sales and they want to be able to get some little applicable reminders and ideas that they should take away from this podcast that can really help them be more effective in getting people's attention, booking some powerful appointments, and making the revenue go up.
Yeah, by the way, I love that you do this podcast and it's so important to the community. And I'm glad you brought up used car salesmen. Now, nothing against them. You know, I had some family members that did that for a few years, but I can tell you this, that, you know, when I train my sales team and talk about training sales teams, what I tell people all the time is like, listen, people aren't sales resistant. They're salesmen resistant. I hear saleswomen resistant. They're salespeople resistant. See, everyone likes sales. I'll tell you why. People like buying things. You know what I mean? People love to buy. They just don't like to be sold. And so at the end of the day, my training to my entire team and anyone who I train is I say, listen, the better you are at not sounding like a salesman is the better you are going to be at sales. And so think about everything you were trained or everything that you thought is the best way to do it and do the opposite of that. And so we have this training that I do with people that I say, okay, listen, tell me all the reasons why your product is amazing. And they tell me all these, and they can nail it, right? And they say it so well, and they say all these great value props, and they say all the great things about their product. I said, great. Now tell me the opposite of that. And then they're like, what? Deer in headlights. I said, let's break this down every single sentence, and let's talk about the opposite of that. Those are the problems. So in my scenario, I would say, okay, we're the world's largest remote sales development agency. We've helped all these amazing companies do this, this, and this. Okay, how do we break that up and flip it upside down? Well, we work with companies that invite us in who have issues getting more appointments on the calendar and have low win rates and are not hitting quota every single month. Now, I'm assuming that you don't deal with any of those problems, right? And they're like, no, we actually have some of those problems. Okay, well, would it be worth 15 minutes to see if it's something that we can help you with? And maybe you can start getting back on track for the next two quarters and finish up 2025 with a bang. And that's my approach, right? And so that's a much different way of approaching it where everyone's just trying to be a billboard or a mini commercial. And that's sales. That's marketing, right? You want to be a salesperson. You want to ask questions, find out what the problem is, and then gain interest and pique their interest and curiosity and move them to the next step. I don't know. Did I answer your question?
Hell yeah.
I'm not sure. Okay.
No, this is exactly it. It's just like whatever you think is a big thing that you do amazingly, think about the opposite state of that. And that'll be probably a better way to lead the question in to see if they need your product or service deal. I want to ask on one more topic here, which is you talked about the need for grit. You mentioned it lightly at the beginning. And I want to speak about one of the big aspects of sales is that sales is not easy. I think there's a lot of emotional regulation that's required, a lot of mindset. And God, I've had debates with people. It's like, is mindset overemphasized for success in sales? And it's like, no, it's actually underemphasized. There's so much emotional grit. Oftentimes, I take a joke on people where it's like, hey, when I see people are A students in school, it's tough to get in sales because success could look like a 30% grade on a test if you're closing that many. And so I wanted to speak about that psychological toll, that aspect of dealing with so much negativity, rejection in the process of being in sales. And what's your usual advice for people who might be struggling with that?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I just started my own podcast too, and I've been on guests and I've been doing the podcast circuit for a few years. And I said, you know what? I'm going to do one too. And mine is called Do Hard Things. That's the name of my podcast. And the reality is, and the reason why it is that is because, you know, I grew up in upstate cold Buffalo, New York. And for those who know the area, it's cold. It's three seasons, July, August, and winter. Okay. And so it's hard. Now, also with about the area that I grew up in, it's very blue collar, meaning that everyone in my family, truth, this is truth, everyone in my family, you know, had to lift heavy things to make money, had to, you know, potentially get hurt at work on roofs and on buildings and doing construction to make money. Or they smelled like fish and came home at 3 a.m. because they're in the restaurant business to make money. I realized that my mouth and my mind can make money. And it was like an explosion in my head. And so the reality is just because we're not physically doing hard labor doesn't mean sales isn't hard. And so when I interview people, I'm interviewing people who are usually in sales and marketing and came through the dumps and started in humble beginnings, but most importantly, rose to the top and are multi-seven-figure earners, all because they learned how to sell. And it's hard. It is hard. But it's also normal. And I think the biggest thing people have a hard time with is they strive for perfection and they think that they have to close 80 to 90% on the grade to be good. Well, in baseball, if you bat 300, you're making millions of dollars a year and you're doing pretty well, but you're out 7 times out of 10. And so, you know, you have to think about it like that. It's normal to have low success rates to be still considered highly successful in sales. So that's how I approach it.
Gabe, I just enjoyed this conversation so much, and it brings a great perspective into the world of sales. And for those who are listening who are like nowhere near B2B sales, like I would definitely keep an eye and an ear open around the concepts that happen there, because what you will see are more sophisticated, more mature, and just much better tested methods of sales that you can definitely learn from, emulate, because hey, when there's millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars at stake for these companies, they don't mess around with the place that gets the revenue through the door. And that's through a sales process. And so I love what you're doing, Gabe. I love the fact that you're bringing these SDRs into these companies and helping bring back the humanity into sales. And I'm excited about you bringing the word forward in a powerful way to really make sales a beautiful thing that I'm advocating for. I know you're advocating for, but I'm not going to let you go before I ask the one question I ask all my guests on the show, which is, you're on the Selling with Love podcast. So what does selling with love mean to you?
Well, I think it's really about being passionate about your why and knowing why you're doing it. You know, when I was young, I was like, I just want a nice car. You know what I mean? I just want to like, you know, be able to go on cool trips. And I was very money motivated. And the way I sold was not the way I sell today. And I don't even like the person I was when I was 23 years old selling, because it was all about the commission. But today I have an 11-year-old daughter. I have a beautiful wife. I have a mom. I have a sister who can't work anymore due to like an injury. So it's like I have people that are responsible for and I love very, very much. And so that is my reason to do what I do and work every day. But more importantly, I have a huge company and a team of people that I'm watching see success. And my job is to work for them. So like my sellers, my closers, my guys who and ladies who are closing deals, I tell them every single day, okay, guys, tell me what to do. What do you need me to do? Do you need me to call that person? Do you need me to follow up that person? Do you need me to send that note? Do you need me to connect with someone on LinkedIn? Like my job is to serve them. And I think that's super important. And I think, you know, service to many leads to greatness. And the more you can help, you know, people get what they want, you know, you can have everything you want. So I think that's what sales is all about.
My guy, Gabe. Fantastic conversation. I love everything you're about. I'm very excited we had you on the show, and all the best in the scaling of your company and in the support of the companies you serve. And thank you for the message, the wisdom, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate being here.
I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast.
Memorial Day deals are here at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances, including Samsung. Plus, save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances, $396 or more. Like the Samsung Bespoke AI Laundry Combo, the largest capacity, fastest all-in-one laundry combo available that washes and dries in one machine. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid 5/15 through 6/18. Selection varies by location. Total savings varies based on purchase amount. See Lowe's.com for details.